also hit?
I've got a flashy red light.
I've got a flashy, flashy red light. Yep.
Mine is kind of a flashy, like a vermilion, though. I don't think it's just quite red. It's kind of a deep...
It's coy about it.
Hold on, let me...
It's a coral rose.
Let me look that up. That might mean something else. No, that means recording. That means recording. Okay. Right. I didn't hear Brad, though. Is Brad good on flashing red lights?
Yep, flashing red.
All right.
Good stuff. All right, how about the code phrase? Come on.
You know what? I've discovered that I never actually get to the code phrase when I'm lining up the audio.
Oh, why? Does it work?
Because I guess the most appropriate code phrases are, "Hey, is your thing blinking? Am I recording? That's what I always end up lining up on. Is blinking? We recording?" But we should just do the code words just because they're funny, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, go, Chris. What's your code word?
All right, this is Chris Straub. My code word is biscuits. Biscuits.
Nice. This is Dave Kellett. My code phrase is, dude looks like a lady.
This is Scott Kurtz, and my code word is loving an elevator.
Nice.
Hit us with another Aerosmith. Brad, come on.
Let's see if Brad can come up with a third one.
This is Brad Geiger, and my code word is coffee.
See, Brad and I are teamed up on this. We're having breakfast. You guys are listening to this, you and Tyler. Yeah, that's good.
Hey, listen, if we're gonna talk about Comic-Con, let's get it out of the way now.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to feel nervous about it the whole time.
Okay, look, how awesome is it going to be? Let's answer that question.
Well, wait, before we even talk about that, you guys need to make a correction from last Webcomics Weekly, because there's been an update to your booth situation. So,
that's right.
We've got a pretty nice situation set up, and that is we're going to actually be covering about the half pixel is going to be represented in three different places on the San Diego floor. And the new thing that Scott was talking about was that half pixel is going to have its own actual booth. That's going to be in the IP Pavilion. I think that stands for Independent Publishers. It's just south of DC Comics, and it's over in aisle 2100. You know what? I just realized that that's how I've got it in my blog, but I don't have the actual booth number.
2107.
2107.
2107.
And we're going to be splitting our time between there and doing author signings at the Image booth. And Image is going to be right kitty corner to Marvel and Dark Horse, and it's over in aisle 2700.
2729 is the booth number.
And Scott is going to be in the heart of the webcomics area at a PVP booth, and he's going to be in aisle 1400.
Yeah, 1437. That's right.
And so lest all those numbers confuse you, here's the basic idea. If you're looking for Scott, go to his booth. If you're looking for Chris, Brad, and I, go to the Half Pixel booth. And then in general, pretty much once a day, the four of us will be appearing over at the Image booth. So you can you look for us in the main booth, and then if you happen not to see us, or if you want to swing by the Image booth and see us there for signings on how to make webcomics, the four of us will be taking turns over at Image. So
I dare you not to run into us. We're going to be everywhere.
Yeah. Also, depending on how the night prior went, I will be in the men's room, the Southwest men's room, about 5 hours a day.
Have you ever seen that SNL skit, Andy Pops Into Frame? That's Half Pixel this year. Every booth is just us popping into frame.
Every Flickr photo from the con. What? Oh, my God, it's Dave.
We're going to be at the Dark Horse booth, the Umbrella booth. We're going to be at many anime booths.
We'll be at the Belgian Bande Dessinée booth. Bonjour, would you like to see the Half Pixel booth?
And then just Brad slowly rising from behind the table.
Smiling.
It's like that old vaudevillian elevator joke where you press the button and you slowly rise up, you know? Brad's like...
it's going to be awesome. I'm pumped.
And don't forget, we mentioned it last week when Chris wasn't here, but it's worth mentioning again, Chris is giving out free portfolio reviews.
Yes, that's the most important thing. Right? Yeah, thank you, David.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Did I miss... I must have missed a show then. I mean, I remember talking about it on maybe the one previous to that one. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and I'm just going to bite the bullet. All right, bring them around. I'll take a look.
That's nice.
And, you're,
and then,
you're, man,
and then I'll learn a lesson that I probably should have learned by now. it's one that you guys all seem to have learned. So
you know what's gonna happen? Some very sweet-natured cartoonist is gonna come up and be like, "Oh, Mr. Straub, could I get you to just like take a look at my work?" Yeah, sure. Let's have a look. And based on the kindness and sort of hopefulness that you engender from talk with them, they sort of look over at Brad and they're like, "And Mr. Gaga, no."
Mr. Geiger, and he just goes.
Yeah, it's just like a cobra hissing.
Yeah, or a hyena laughing. That's also that could happen.
Oh, wow. My gosh.
Okay, we're starting to hit a nerve over there. We better back off.
Yeah.
Oh God. That's all right. If you don't want to hear anybody laughing, if you want to hear somebody in a sour mood, that'll be me after day one.
It's coming.
That's gonna happen.
That's definitely gonna happen.
It's just gonna be, Chris, I want to grab volume 2. Duh, no, I am not speaking. Oh, what? Buy something? Yes. Okay.
Oh, my!
And by that
my
time, they're already walked away with their head hung in shame.
Oops.
Don't come back.
I'm sorry.
You know what's going to happen?
You're not even doing a review of how you read my book.
Or like they come up to the booth and they're just like, "Hey," and then I grab the whatever's in their hands, like their program. I'm like, "All right, let's take a look at what you got here." A lot of text, very varied drawing styles. I don't really understand what you're going for here. It looks like a program, frankly.
I quite honestly, your sequential art looks like a map of a convention floor.
A lot of numbers, a lot of like interviews that I mean can't possibly be real. I think this guy's dead, first of all. So you know, you're not fooling anybody.
All right, let's get into it. Any other San Diego Comic-Con news before we get into it?
Apparently the entire cast of The Greatest American Hero is going to be at the show for
Hold
a panel.
Because
they're going to make a comic book, and Stephen J. Cannell is going to be there to make some big announcements about the franchise. So I'm thinking maybe a movie or a TV show. But, I mean, that panel is worth it just to see what Connie Selica and Robert Culp look like now. I mean, maybe not. Like, maybe we shouldn't. But
Robert,
why not just keep your dreams?
Especially because he was such a like a solid leading man kind of guy back in the day.
Well, Robert Culp was in
he's in The Outer Limits, Demon with a Glass Hand.
Yes, he was, but what I'm saying is more recent than that, Chris. What I'm trying to explain
that's
to you.
That's all I know he was
yeah,
in.
Yeah, okay. He looked pretty good then. He was still pretty young. He used to be on Everybody Loves Raymond as the wife's dad, and he was looking pretty haggard.
Hold
then.
On, let's go to the old Google.
He was born in 1930.
Oh.
You know what? Then he's not doing so bad. He's not doing so bad.
He is 78.
He's a good man.
He's not going to be jumping in the hoods of any cars. Let's put it that way.
He's not joining Bo and Luca as they run away from Boss Hogg.
No.
Right.
Well, but, I mean, that's exciting.
You know what? They aren't either, so.
It's that's exciting for...
they're trying to get over the hood of the car. It's one leg at a time.
It's just this. It's nothing but old.
They have one of those wheelchair lifts built into the General Lee.
you just see one of them going, "Oh, my sciatica! Oh, geez."
It's just a pile of 70s stars on the far side of the car that none of them made it over. They just hit it and fall down. They just
oh my god! Out. I can't believe you guys are still dealing with Boss Hogg. Well, no, it's actually his grandson now, but you know they've been keeping it in the family. It's good.
The thing that concerns me the most about them gathering is whether or not they're going to find me and sue me for Truth, Justice, and the American Way. That's my.
Oh, you don't think they'd do that, do you?
No,
you
but
oh, Scott, you've got to go to that panel and then ask a question and be like, "I got these papers from your lawyer, and my award-winning comic, Truth, Justice, and the American Way, it is in no way infringement of this show."
Just
and then they'll be like, "Who are you?"
Oh, okay.
and then punch him, just launch over the table.
That weird fight or flight confusion. Where
you'll
I don't
catch,
know what to do.
You will catch Selica off guard.
Punch
she is going down.
That was probably the funniest line ever uttered by me that will never, ever be topped was Mark Nathan suggested one year that he might get Linda Carter to come to the Baltimore Comic Con. He told Frank Cho and I that, and he's like, so what do you think you'd do if you could talk to Linda Carter, like meet her for in person? And I said, I think my fight or flight reflex would get very confused. I think I would pull down my pants, punch her in the face, and jump out a window.
So that's where that came from.
Yeah.
So that's why you do that.
I love Chris's response. That's where that came from.
Well, it's been in the strip. I didn't know that it'd come from an actual situation.
Yeah. All right. So.
All right. I've got an email here. This one is from Aaron Lawrence. He writes about answering email. He says, you touched on this somewhat in an earlier episode, but I was wondering how you all handle answering email. I get somewhere between 30 and 50 emails a day, and it can take a couple hours to reply to all of them. Do you guys have a bunch of form letters ready to go, or do you do each individually? Do you answer them as they come to spread it all out, or do you do them all at once? Do you have any tips that'll save me some time without being a jerk and ignoring everyone? Thank you kindly, from Aaron.
I've got 30 to 50 emails a day. I've got one tip. You don't have to answer the emails that come from Nigerian bank managers. Those ones you can just go ahead and throw away.
How many of those emails are about Viagra? That's my question.
Yeah. And how many of those emails have commas and asterisks between every letter in the word Viagra?
30 to 50?
Yeah, I don't think I get 2 emails a day. And
wait, did he
the Viagra?
Well, did he say 3 to 50? That's quite.
No, 30 to 50.
Oh, 30 to 50 a day. What does that add up to?
If he gets 30 emails, it's a bad day.
Yeah. Only 30. I'm only gonna be here for 6 hours.
That's 250 emails a week. That's about right.
Well, wait a minute. Without contradicting you guys too much, I don't know if that's that far. You probably get more than you think you get, then. You probably are answering them throughout the day, because if I go, let me look at a day where I didn't answer any emails.
A day without emails.
I get about, on the 18th, I didn't answer any of my emails on the 18th. Let me look. I got about 40 emails. So it's conceivable.
Gee whiz. 40? Dave, I literally, from people who want an answer from me or are writing, I get like 4 a day. Maybe.
Really? God, I get much more than that.
Yeah.
It's an endless stream.
No.
You know what I think, though, it is? For Scott, it's just the volume of readerships. But for me, it's because I think my readers know that I answer all my emails. And so I think I tend to get a higher email inbox.
But you guys are talking about literal, like, reader email. Like, hey, Dave, I really like today's show and blah, blah, blah. And not just, like, general like,
no.
business
like,
email and stuff.
Emails
like that.
That I have to take action on in some way, shape, or form, yeah.
That includes reader mail, then,
right,
for
right,
you.
Right, right.
Do you consider responding to a reader an action?
Yes, I make it a point to respond to every email I get.
Whoa,
really? I try to, but it's not. I mean,
and Scott, can I tell you how this has burned me? I now get emails for Scott because I answer emails for every email that I get.
Yeah, that I.
Why this is a new phenomenon, but all of a sudden in the last 3 weeks, I've
do you guys
like
know about this?
Five...
Have you guys heard about this?
I have gotten emails from people going, "Hey, I can't get a hold of Scott. Can you send him this important information on?" And I'm like, dude, I am not what? No, I am not his secretary. Just because I answer emails doesn't mean. And so I can send them on to Scott, or most of them I have anyway.
It's so funny, too, because I scold my fans like they're my kids, right? Because like, I'll get an email from Dave, and it'll be, you just read it, and it's like, the email read backwards is, dude, I am not Scott's personal secretary. That is not cool, okay? You need to email him. And then it's like, my name is so-and-so, and I do a webcomic, and I'm trying to get a hold of Scott. And then I email the reader, and I'm like, come on, man. Emailing Dave? Don't do that. Don't play me that way.
So the poor guy's getting it left and right from us. No, I'm normally very nice, but I'm starting to see a pattern that I'm getting emails for Scott, and I was like, "Whoa, I got to nip this in the bud," because I did not want to be like, Well, Scott's right now at Starbucks. He'll be emailing you later in the day.
Well, I don't even know. The thing that confuses me is how did you get chosen as my why don't they email Chris?
I get them occasionally, but not like
Dave's gotten like two or three
thing.
This month.
I've gotten a lot. I think, honest to God, I think it's because people know I answer every email that I get that's written by.
It's a good reputation to have.
Oh, sorry, Brad. Go ahead.
No, I can't remember whether I ever told you about this one. I'm trying to remember what the topic was. I think I passed it along to you. but I've even gotten one or two of those.
Trying to get a hold of me?
Where they said, yeah, I can't get in touch with Scott because of XYZ. Yeah, oh, now I remember. It had to do with the how to make webcomics book. And it was some kind of...
I have not received my order.
Oh, no, I don't know whether it was that or not, but it was some kind of question or comment, and I'm like, I did forward it on to you, but I'm like, how come this guy, it's the same thing, how come this guy is talking
to me? For the original question asker in our mailbag, Brad's responses are different from Dave's. He says, why don't you go ahead and read the writing on the wall, buddy? Scott's not replying to you for a reason, so best of luck. Take it easy.
Take it easy.
I get emails that say, Scott, could you please ask Dave to respond to his email in which I ask him where you are?
Well, okay, but now let's actually... Go ahead. I was going to say, let's actually answer it.
I was going to say, now, I'm not handling this kind of volume, so it's not a big deal for me. I can pretty easily answer everybody that writes me and give them a pretty... I mean, like Dave... says it's a good idea to answer all your emails. But Dave and Scott, you guys talk about how you're dealing with that kind of volume.
Yeah.
So my solution is probably different from Scott's. I'll let Scott go first.
Well, to be honest, there's an hierarchy of emails that I'll answer. If someone writes me a nice email, I usually respond with what?
An anarchy or a hierarchy?
There's an anarchy. What I do is I take all the emails and I print them out and I take a pile and then I look at them and I just throw them in the air and I scream anarchy as they flutter down and then I consider them answered. What did I say? I thought I said airarchy.
You said airarchy.
What's the
An
word?
Hierarchy.
Hierarchy? Is that how you say hierarchy. It? Hierarchy?
Yeah, hierarchy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And Brad was champing at the bit to correct you on that.
Yeah.
He's looking for the opening.
Oh,
it's pronounced.
Oh, it's been expressed.
So I have a hierarchy of.
How do you build a hierarchy for that kind of thing, though?
Well, usually if someone writes me a friendly email, I'll take a moment to write back, and it might be as simple as saying, "Hey, thanks for writing. I really appreciate the kind words." I mean, they're real quick. I try to answer questions. If I get a bunch of the same question, rather than respond to all of them, I'll just make a post. Because I figure, listen, they're reading the site, so I answered their question. Maybe I didn't send them a personal email, but it's quicker. But I don't feel that I'm responsible or beholden to respond to rude emails or hate mail.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't respond to those. And then what's really happened lately is the fifth person to email me about something that's the same thing, I stop responding. I just can't. Like, for example, there's about 50 or 60 emails coming in a day now that's just like, hey, I'd sure love to hear your review of The Dark Knight, you know, because they saw my Twitter post that I saw it. But, I mean, I'm not going to respond to each of them and say, oh, maybe I'll post that, you know, in a week or two, but I'm going to go to San Diego and, you know, I'm not going to. But if it's an addressed question or a compliment, I usually will respond.
Okay. That makes sense. And as I say, that's probably a workable system for the volume that you get, because I'm sure you get 10 times what I get in terms of,
yeah, I get a ton. I get a ton.
So my system is that I try to respond to everybody, and even sometimes that's two or three words of, like Scott said, for a kind – I almost feel bad in a way, because sometimes the kinder someone is, the shorter the email response I get. Like, I'll get a three-paragraph just, you know, effusively kind email, and I'll be like, thanks so much, that meant a lot to me. And then I send it, and I think, well, that's kind of a weak sauce response for all that typing time. But, you know, the honest thing of truth is you can't give everybody the paragraph that they deserve or want. But I figure at least if I give them some feedback, even if it's just a line of, you know, I really appreciate it, thanks so much for reading, you know, that means the world to me, that sort of thing. That means a lot over time to readers. And I think that's one of the things, I don't know if it was I wrote about or Brad wrote about in the book, but that kind of stuff adds up over time to the passion that your fans have for your strip. It's how much contact they get with you, you know. So it's, for me, it's more of a, it's not that I owe them a response, it's just that I think from a business and a fan building perspective, it goes a long way. For very little effort every day, it carries a lot of weight come time to sell books or sell t-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
I think the reason why that the people who are nice get the smaller emails is because you feel relieved, right? Like, they understand the relationship that they should have with you. It's like you get an email from someone's like, really been enjoying the strip, you're doing a good job, keep it up, I hope to keep reading PvP for a long time, you know, and it's like, awesome, somebody who gets it, you know, I can write them back and say, thanks for the kind words, you keep reading, I'll keep drawing, and then they just go, oh, cool, and then half a second later, they're like, okay, what am I working on now? So, you know that you're safe to respond to them because, awesome, at least one person in my readership that understands how my relationship is truly supposed to be with them, and that is of a creator whose work they enjoy but don't know and aren't friends with and will never know and will never be friends with, right? Like, that's not going to happen. But then you get these long emails where, like, I got an email today where someone is practically breaking up with me. Like, they're telling me the history of my relationship with them, the first strip they read, what happened, you know, like, what I did wrong where I lost them and what I need to do to get them back. And it's like, I'm not going to respond to you, or if I do, it almost seems like those guys get the longer responses because you feel like you have to sit them down and say,
wait a minute, you're not going to reply to me?
God damn it, David.
Chris just did the laugh, and I think it was the Cookie Monster. What was that? You're just like,
sounds like the sisters on The Simpsons.
No, but you're right, Scott. It's very much like what you were saying to me the other day: is that people know you don't know them. It's very much a relationship that's very deep and passionate to them, and you're like,
but
oh,
you know
all
what?
Right, well,
though,
thanks for the email.
Let me wax philosophical here for just a second. I've been worried lately about the idea that it's important that maybe what's more important than the size of your readership is
the size of your heart.
Yeah. The size of your resolve to do better. No, it's the idea that among whatever size your readership is, that your strip should be their number one, you know, and then you're going to get a much more loyal response from them, even if you have a small readership. And the idea that I don't get as many emails, I wonder if that's indicative of, I like Star Slip, but it's in my top 10. You know what I mean? Whereas if somebody clearly, if they write you, Scott, and say, Scott, I have to break up with you because PvP, I don't like it anymore, they've been wounded. They've felt so deeply about PvP and what's been going on, you know?
Yeah.
Clearly it was their number one. So, but here's the question. How do you answer all these emails?
Oh, I think short and as thoughtful as you can make it and as meaningful as you can make it in as few as words. And
so thanks, brother.
be aware that you cannot give everyone everything that they need or want or deserve in your response. For example, very often someone will email me and be like, hey, Dave, can you explain to me your whole process for how you create a cartoon? Well, I mean, you guys would understand that email would take me an hour to write. As far as and yes, I probably should and do have
your process.
read today's Star Slip, copy paste joke, and make it into a Sheldon joke. No, but you know what I mean. Like, you know what I mean by in terms of the energy requested versus how much you can actually give. Like, some people are asking you emails where you're like, "There's no way I can give you everything you're asking for here in an email." But what I can do is, what I can do is either I'll have some stuff templated if it's a question that I've asked a lot before, or I'll point them to my frequently asked questions page, or I'll forward it on to Brad and say, "Hey, Brad, here's a question for you."
and having a frequently asked questions page is a really good idea.
Yeah, I use that one a lot. And honest to God, the best thing that I've ever done for my cartooning related emails is co-authoring that How to Make Webcomics book, because anytime there's a specific question, I can say, you know what, Brad covered this perfectly in his chapter on conventions. You don't have to buy it, but you might want to check it out at a library. And that to me is the satisfactory answer, you know.
I've been doing that a lot too. I answer questions on a volunteer basis at allexperts.com. And I do that a lot. And the nice thing about that is you've got to say, check it out at the library if you don't want to pick up the book, because you don't want to sound like you're constantly hawking the book and doing that. But I agree. I do that several times with my question answering, is just point them right to the How to Make Webcomics book. It's all there.
Yeah. And, I often say go to a library, because I can tell just by the vocabulary and the way the spelling is in the email that this is a 12-year-old kid writing me, and I don't want to be like, go buy the book. I don't need a 12-year-old's money. I can direct him to a library, for God's sake. But I think, it's the same as what we had when we were kids, and we were asking cartoonists how to do it, or we were trying to find resources. Some kids still don't know that that book is out there, or that even Glassbergen's books are out there, or McLeod's. And, just pointing them out is going the distance for a kid growing up in Kansas or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's certainly one of those things where they, it's just a part of the job. People take the time to write, and you've got to make the time to write back. And most of the time, you don't do as well as you wish you did. But I mean, everyone has to make the effort. And hopefully people don't get too upset if on your busier days you have to keep it shorter. I've tried using form letters before, and every time I start, I stop, because I think it's just going to be easier to just write a couple words that are
your own words.
Yeah. Yeah, I usually I save the form letters for the hate mail, but
right.
Yeah,
but
I will
make this guarantee to cartoonists that are facing this sort of question, is that this is an experiment, and it'll take you a year to do, but if you answer, and this is based on my experience, if you answer every email you get for a year and you don't notice a noticeable uptick in either your income or in your readership fan base, the passion that they feel, then I'll give you $1. Because I swear to God, if you do it for a year and you keep it up day after day, you will notice a change in your business. That's how important I think it is.
You know what's cut down on my email? And I'll be I think this is very interesting. What's cut down on my email is Twitter.
That's true.
Having Twitter, I think I avoid a lot of emails, because people will send me a question and I really quickly just respond with a like, yeah, haha, and then it's like, oh, cool. There was that interaction. It was instant, And I think that keeps people from sending in emails. So
yeah, I think Twitter is awesome, especially now that I don't know how old it is, but it's relatively new, the reply feature where you can see everybody who's talking to you, even if they're not on
list. Even if you're not following them, if they started off with @ and then your username, you see it.
Right. And so, it's been a good tool to interact with.
Fantastic.
You know what? I'm going to now that you reminded me, I'm going to say that I maybe get 15 to 20 of those a day.
Yeah, do you see what I'm saying? Twitter's taking care of a lot of that on Twitter.
Yeah, I prefer it even.
Yep.
For that kind of interaction. It's like I am, except I don't have to get around to replying right away.
Yep.
It's good.
Well, Brad, unless there are any other chime-ins from you on that thought, we can probably move on to the next question, yeah?
Oh, I think we can move on.
All righty, cool. So I'll read off the next one here, and I'm just going to launch mail, and I'm not at all hemming and hawing while I reopen mail here. Right here.
And it's loading.
Oh,
and
loading, and we're finding it. Okay, here we go. This is from Jesse, and it says, "Gentlemen!" Exclamation point. What a great way to start the email. "Gentlemen, I'm an elementary art teacher, and our school district has warned its younger teachers about their web presences. So I've thought about doing my webcomic under a pen name in an effort to protect myself. I'm curious about your thoughts on pen names, and also wonder, are there any special considerations with pen names, such as copyright concerns? Thanks, Jesse."
Right, wow, I don't know about the copyright part.
That's a great question.
That is a good question. Well, I guess if you're going to do a copyright and use a pen name, you would just copyright it under a company name? God, I don't know. That is a
Well, I was going to say that maybe maybe using a pseudonym like that would fall under a DBA type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say you'd almost have to at least do a DBA, if not incorporate, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And DBA, for those that don't know, is a doing business as, which is it's usually a locally administered function.
Yeah, it's within DBA. Your county or your city.
Right, right.
I have one for Nightlight Press, even though I tend not to use it for anything.
So
but
that's just
so that if I get a check written to that, then I can still cash it.
Right, right.
Yeah. I think. Well, listen, I usually hate pen names. They're a pet peeve of mine. But I think if you're if you have an identity that you need to protect, that's a legitimate reason, and it's lacking pretension. I actually found out that a comic book writer that I know, I discovered that this comic book writer was using, and it's not like an avatar name or an internet name. It's not like you know. Well, really? You know, Echo One is not that writer's real name. You know, it's you know, it's like, you know, Bob, you know, Bob Smith, and it's like, oh, that's Bob's name, really isn't Bob. No, it's a pen name. But the pet peeves I get are, you know, people that try to keep some weird kind of air of mystery about them, and like, you know, they don't use their real name. It's like, you know. No Shoes for Tuesday by Maximus, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those are tough.
For the longest time, I thought Gabe and Tycho was pretty dumb. But, I mean, by now they're known as Mike and Jerry as much as Gabe and Tycho, but...
Yeah, I have to kind of stop myself from calling them Gabe and Tycho. I don't want to do that. It's weird.
Well, if it was Tycho and Gabe, I don't think I would, but Gabe is a normal name, and I usually go Gabe and Jerry is usually what I end up doing. It's so funny.
Huh.
And then Mike made it even more confusing by naming his son Gabe. I don't know. I've always just been me, and I don't understand the problem with that.
I used to understand it, where I felt like I needed to shield myself from well, I don't know what it would have been. But I don't like the idea that there's some deniability. I don't know how insecure the internet is that if I put my real name in a forum, then like 3 days of dedicated hacking later, some guy's got my social security and my credit card number.
Well, but then what happens when you go to a convention? Are you still going to use your pen name? Like people?
I don't know. I kind of don't like that. Like, here's the thing. I don't have a problem with a pen name necessarily if it's like a normal name. It's like, that's a pseudonym. I'm not comfortable with giving out my real name, so my name is Mark White, you know? But when I go to a con and I'm like, hey, Maximus, how are you doing? I feel uncomfortable, you know?
I love that it's Maximus, too, because that just sort of fits the mood of those kind of people. They're like, yep, I'm Dragon Lord, you know?
Right, hey, Dragon Lord.
I use it because a friend of mine did a comic strip under a pen name, and he was kind of making fun of pen names, and he used the name Maximus.
Oh, that's right.
Remember,
Chris
did his Intuit strip.
Intuit online, yeah.
He was by Maximus, yeah.
So I exhibited with the guys from Unshelved a couple weeks back at the American Library Association conference, you know, here in L.A. And Gene, which is his pen name for Unshelved, he's the writer on the strip, it's his pen name. And the reason why he did it was for professional reasons, which as a librarian – writing about libraries, his concern was that, and I hope I'm not talking out of school, but his concern was that there would be professional conflicts here or there, which I think is probably as fair enough a reason as much as this teacher's concern for a pen name as anything. When it's just an artistic choice, I'm a little less forgiving of it. But I think when there's a day job and a night job concern of conflicts of interest or a boss that would get mad and fire you. You know, when there's questions of rent on the line or a mortgage that needs to be paid, I think that's a little bit more understandable.
That I think that, and also the thing that doesn't bother me about that is that sounds like a real name. Like, I have no reason to think that is, like, I was surprised to learn that that's a pen name. because it sounds like somebody's name.
I've known women that have used pen names, so just in case, you know, because they're worried about maybe someone getting fanish and looking them up. That's perfectly understandable, but they're using a real name. You know, it's not. That's what I'm saying.
But awesome, having said having said all that about Gene with Unshelved, I have to say that the entire ALA convention, I was calling him fake name. So like when we were, when we'd have to go to lunch, I'd be like, "All right, fake name, can I go get you Starbucks or anything? You good?" And like literally the entire convention, and it's very fun to do with someone who uses a pen.
Dave, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Dave, but you don't have to answer any further than that. Do you know his real name?
I do know his real name.
Okay, so
who is this?
Gene from Unshelved.
No.
So he's not opposed to giving it to his friends and stuff. He knows people.
No. And that's
like professional contacts.
Right. That's, I think, where the weirdness can easily be solved is that when you just say, look, I am doing this for professional reasons, but my real name is actually Jehoshaphat, you know, and then you're like, all right.
Jehoshaphat. Why? What was the reason for him keeping a pen name? I forgot. I didn't hear it. I mean,
the potential, I think, for conflicts of interest between his day job as a librarian and his.
Oh, I see. Because he's a librarian. I see. No. That makes sense.
So, and that's where I think it works is when you either have a professional or personal, or I mean, I suppose like Chris was saying or Scott was saying, if there's a fear of personal endangerment, that's worthwhile. But I don't think it adds to a strip to add mystery to it. You know, like, oh, I wonder who Mysterio is. That's you know.
No, it falls under the same category of people that take the time to do an interview with somebody and then answer with stupid, retarded joke answers.
I can see that. Or like the idea that they have to take on this avatar, this persona before they speak to anybody, and I'm sure that contributes a lot to. So how do you come up with the ideas for your comic strip? Monkeys eating pie.
Yeah, exactly. Or I watched that Google Talk with Rich Stevens, and he was like, I go by R. Stevens because when I first started my comic, I wanted people to think maybe I was a girl. I wanted a mystery, and it worked. People thought I was a girl. Really? Like,
see, cause,
what?
See, because I went just now, I went, oh, that's crafty. Like, that's kind of smart. I actually, let me tell you this, though, along the same lines. I used to go more by Christopher Straub, and then it annoyed me that people forget that I've got a K and an F instead of a PH. But I kind of feel like if I call myself Chris Straub, KRIS is kind of an effeminate name. I don't mind if people initially think, maybe that's a girl. That might
add to my cachet. And Chris, I don't want to add to that feeling, Chris, though, but I've had people come up to the booth and ask while they're looking at you, is he a guy or a girl? So I think it
boosts my sales like 15-20%.
I think it could work for you. I think it could work for you as a marketing angle.
Especially when I tell them my hotel room number.
People come up to me and to my face ask me if I'm a boy or a girl.
My mother asks me whether or not.
My physician, while I'm in the examining room, has asked me.
And my response is always the same. Buy a lady a drink?
They say, which response from me is going to sell this book?
What? I tell you what, what's gonna get you into Starslit Volume 2 today?
I could be a lady, and I've got like the shaving kit right there. Like, no problem. Hold on, let me duck down, and 5 minutes later.
And then when the next person needs you to be a guy, you just like trying to grow the beard as fast.
Just trying to force it out, rubbing Rogaine on my face furiously. Come on.
You're having a Bruce Banner moment, just trying to make the Hulk happen.
So say something mean to me. Maybe that'll help.
That's why every convention for us ends with all four of us throwing duffel bags over our shoulders and walking in different directions.
So let me ask you guys this though, because I should have waited till the joke was over before I went serious. So I think I talked to maybe Chris about this once. I thought a long time ago that I would do a second strip, but under a pen name, just for fun, just to see if I could build the audience without any association with Sheldon. Uh-huh. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Can I go first? I used to be a real big proponent of that, but maybe only to prove, like, recently I've Twittered about it. I said, I want to just create a fake cartoonist and then make an awful strip just to have a place to discuss all of my issues with the breed. But now that you've said that, I thought, oh man, what a piece of hubris that is. Like, can I build it up from nothing? Is it all skill, or is it my own amazing name and my brand that's making this strip a success?
Oh, I didn't mean to sound like that, but yeah, you're probably thinking.
No, I think that kind of goes also into the same category as the teacher that wants to keep her identity maybe under wraps, because Sheldon's a family strip, and you want to maintain that. But maybe mm-hmm. you also have a strip in you about, you know, like a serial killer that can't feel love unless he cuts himself, and you don't want that yeah. to spill into Sheldon. So yeah,
hold on. I'm just grabbing a piece of paper. Hold on,
right there.
A serial.
Does he cut?
This is going to be a weird couple weeks on Sheldon, let me tell you.
First cut is thedeepest.com. Okay.
A special
no, but,
event.
But the only thing about that is that for David, in that situation, sooner or later, let's say this second comic becomes popular, sooner or later, he's going to be asked to come to do a signing, and then the jig is up, unless he wears a mask.
That's when you take it to the next level and hire a guy to be you at cons.
Here's the second part of the question. Is it lame if I wear a mask?
I mean, what we're talking about is very superhero stuff. It's secret identities and alter egos, and it all has the same outcome. As sooner or later, you can, and I'm not downplaying. I think the teacher has a great excuse for doing this, but
yeah.
for somebody who's already got a full-time comic strip, sooner or later your secret identity is going to become public, no matter what you have.
Well, and that works if it's the first identity you've offered.
Yeah.
You know, then it works, but like, you know, well, you can't decide you're going to create a new comic strip where you crap on everybody and call yourself the fake Scott McCloud or something, and then show up at a con and go, hey, it was me all along. Scott, I crapped all over you. Woo! Now how do you like me?
Let's have dinner.
Now how do you like me? And then the stage collapses. And that's your final performance.
When Erica was at con last year with me at San Diego, We took turns pitching, and her pitch was, do you want to read this comic strip? What the hell does that mean,
Brad?
Where did you go?
What? Yeah, Brad, are you all right? Brad laughed, and I laughed at Brad laughing.
She pitched, and I caught, which was weird. But so
I'm cutting that out.
Yeah,
cutting that out.
We were playing baseball. I don't know what you're talking about. So, but we took turns giving the pitch for the strip, and she would say, have you read Starslip Crazes? This is our strip, and which I don't have a problem with, because she has enough input on it that it may as well be our strip. But I think that there was a response from the whoever she was talking to that was like, say, yeah, I want to hear more about this, you know? So I think that kind of approach that may not necessarily be a bad thing, where there's some ambiguity as to who you are. Who's the guy? Oh, the guy who does Nine Chickweed Lane. Brooke, what's his name?
Yeah,
oh,
Brooke McElderney or whatever.
Yeah. He. I read an interview with him. He said that he would get marriage proposals, and because it was because people thought he was a girl.
Yeah, same for Pat Brady over at Rose's Rose.
And Brad Geiger. Yeah, so we get.
So
dear Brad, nothing makes driving this cab more bearable than the zany villainy of Evil Inc.
Brad, the way you draw the female figure, you must know it up close and personal. I want to get to know you.
And Brad, can I say it's a pleasure to meet you. A little awkward. I'm not going to need these roses. I'm going to just put these down. Apparently you're a dude. That's fine. Still enjoy the strip.
Apparently you're a dude.
Hello, Brad. This is Dragon Lord, creator of No Shoes for Tuesday. I'm emailing you because I'm very interested in what you have to offer.
Have you ever met a guy who's got a girl name, like it's Tracy or Kelly?
Or Leslie.
Yeah.
Or Leslie.
Yeah.
Have you ever met a girl who's named like Fred?
No.
That doesn't happen. That should happen.
It should.
That would be awesome. Don't know why I brought that up just now.
I think it only happened once on Angel, and that didn't go so well.
Yeah, it was Fred, and she became a demon. It was awesome. Sometimes Sam. Sam works, too, or Alec. All right, maybe you can see it.
I kind of like Sam. That's the worst.
I don't want to say that, but it's been a chain in the strips. I've kind of had that dichotomy where it was a Samantha, but she was a Sam and stuff like that. And I like I like what that does for a character. Have a girl, you know, whose name is Sam.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting.
Well, it makes him seem more like the better gender, so it can only improve the character.
Right. You can only win with that.
I mean, whatever. You can do like everybody else does and just have a girly character that crosses her arms and rolls her eyes at the antics of the men.
Oh, man.
Oh, that crazy Brent roll. But, so yeah, pen names. I love them.
I'm gonna have to ditch it, Scott. I'm gonna ditch it.
I'm gonna sub it. And so, Brad, do you sub it or flub it? Pen names.
Flub it or flub it?
Oh, God.
Hey, do you zing it
back
or fling it?
There was a podcast, another podcast, where at the end of the show, they always do a segment called Sub or Flub, where they pick a topic, and then you choose to either sub it, you subscribe to it, you're for it, or you flub it, you don't like it.
No, I got to flub the idea of a pen name, unless you have... like this.
Hey, I'm gonna fling it or wing
it. Wait, seriously? Wait, hold on. I without naming the podcast, sub and flub is the best thing to come up with.
I'm gonna zap it and I'm gonna flap it.
I'm gonna hit it or I'm gonna tap it.
What was it? Chris did one. We used to parody this on the Daily Affirmation, but Chris did one where it was like, I think the bit was something like, he's like, all right, Scott, well, we appreciate you being a guest of the show, and now it's time to play our segment at the end of the show, our favorite game called Cowboys or Indians. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I'll play that. And he goes, all right, so the topic tonight is the new Spider-Man movie, Cowboy or Indians? And I'm like, oh, well, I really liked it, so I guess Cowboy. And he's like, oh, no, see, no, Cowboy represents whether, what was it?
That's right. During the
Cowboy means you don't. Cowboy means you don't like it because that represents the white expansion of the Northwest. Indian means you do like it because you're connected to the earth and you understand that everything has a spirit.
Yeah, we're really talking about prior to the Louisiana Purchase, where I mean, there weren't cowboys per se, but at that time, I mean, there could have been seen as sort of a pioneer spirit that you would need to.
It tapped into the French trapper spirit of looking for pelts.
So I guess what I'm saying is, which of those?
Yeah.
Like, how about I like it? Is that okay if I say that?
And then there were other variations that were
the one we did was Fisher hamburgers.
You Fisher hamburger it. But one of them was no matter how they answered, you'd go, whoa, because like it was like built in negative.
Yeah, they're both bad.
They're both
way.
Bad.
Why did you like that?
Why? Yeah. How would you say that about my mother? Oh, jeez.
Would you my mom it or are you your mom it?
Yeah, and then they'd be like, oh, I guess I'm my mom it. You'd be like,
oh,
whoa.
Oh,
really? What is that what the relationship's like in your house? Boo.
My God. All right. Well, I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I would. I guess I'm your mom it.
Hey. Don't talk about my mom. Don't talk about. So anyway, I my mom pen names.
Good. Good job.
All right. And I zap it up.
She's dead. So what does that tell you?
It means you don't want it.
I don't.
Yes.
What are you saying? I want my mom dead? Thanks, brother.
Awkward. Notice how Dave and Brad just showed
up. I know. It's all right, guys. She's dead. She can't hear this to be offended.
Still quiet. Still very quiet.
Still
let's
still
just press
talking.
On.
What's that text mailbag question?
My mom really did die, though.
I don't want
to. We know this.
Oh, okay. It's okay. She's not listening.
No,
she's
Scott,
exploring
you need to,
the cosmos.
You need what? To wait. You need to wait about 30 seconds as we're moving on, and you just go, still dead.
9/11.
9/11. I bet your mom
God
would really
proud. Dang
proud
it.
9/11.
When we were at the 10th anniversary surprise party PvP, my dad was talking like this history. This completely invalid history where apparently he was always for me being a cartoonist, some kind of revisionist crap. But Chris later tells me, I looked over and I saw you and you looked like you were about to cry. And I thought, should I help him or try to drive him over the corner? And so he said, I thought I should lean over and say, Scott, your mom would be really proud of you. And if that didn't work, I'd just go, 9/11. That both would have killed me.
Good stuff.
Anyway, pen names, bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on, unless you need to protect yourself from bad guys. Well, we don't have a third email, but there was a topic I wanted to bring up before the show ended. And do we have any more emails, or should I bring it up?
I think that was it.
What was the topic? I already forget.
That I've seen a little bit around the blogosphere, because, I can't help but ego surf on the book and stuff, see how people are liking it, seeing if maybe there's suggestions for future installments, but...
Ooh, I'm going to do that right now.
I know, me too. I'm curious to see where this is going. All right.
One of the criticisms I've seen from some of our critics, we do have critics, is the notion that we are pitching... almost a manifesto, almost a cult-like, this is the way and it's the only way, and that, there are other ways to make a living in cartooning, and that it's a little irresponsible for us to kind of pitch this as the only true way to success. And to address that, I wanted to say two things. First, I don't know where we've ever said that it's the only way. In fact, I believe in the book we make... And on the podcast, we've made more than one mention that there are many paths to making a living at this or finding success in it. And I think, that's kind of been our mantra for people asking, well, how do you do it? And, the first answer is, well, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But the other thing I wanted to say in our defense was maybe not to answer the question, how do you make a living or how do you become a success, but... When the question is, how do you maintain your creator rights and guarantee yourself the most profit and benefits from your work, it is the only way. Right? Keeping your rights is the only way to do that.
I don't know that's not even our way to do it. That is the way to do it. How else
can
you do it?
Exactly. Like, I have no problem saying that, yes, without a doubt, that is the only way to do it. We lost Dave.
Oh.
Dave just fell off Skype.
Well, that's all right. Let's keep talking until we can bring him back in.
Okay.
What was I going to say about that?
I'm going to take that one step further, and I will say this. Who would ever want to read a how-to book that was written in a way that did not have somewhat of a commanding presence? In other words, who would write read a how-to book that said, well, maybe you want to do it this way, or maybe you want to do it this way, or maybe, you could.
Yeah.
That would be the most wishy-washy, ridiculous, useless book that you could ever imagine. And same goes for the podcast. Listen, there's a reason that we all come out as having definite opinions and having strong opinions. Number one, it's more interesting. Number two, it's more useful. And number three, it's what you expect of a podcast or a book that does what we do, and that is talk about how to make webcomics.
Well, yeah, and let me add this, the idea that this is actually something that I ran into while writing chapters for the book. When I would write them, I used to have this technique where I would write essays for school or whatever, and if it was an opinion piece, I felt compelled to say the words, I think. After or before every sentence, at the start of every sentence, and it's just really tedious writing. I think it's almost implied that if I am writing a personal chapter about what worked for me for web design or what the best type of web design is, in my opinion, I don't need to preface every sentence with "in my opinion," "I feel," "I think," "this worked for me," "this is my thing." It may not be the same for you. Clearly, if I'm the one who's speaking and it's from personal experience, then this is what I have seen. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the only way to do it.
But when it comes to the idea of how do you maintain your creator rights, there's only one way to do it. You just never give them up.
Right. When somebody says, give them to me, you say no.
You never sign them away.
Stuff has a definite, absolute answer. And some of the other stuff that we acknowledge, there's probably lots of ways to do it. We're still going to give you very strong opinions on where we're coming from because, well, we've done this for a long time, and this is what we've seen. It doesn't mean that there's no other way of doing it, but when you hear me talk about something like scanning or composition or word balloons or something like that, you bet your boots I'm going to come forth and say very definite, very direct things. It would be so horrible to listen to if we didn't.
Well, yeah. And let me look at it from a different angle, is that I think part of the thing with the book is that we're going to strongly argue for this point of view or this way of making a career or a living out of comics because, in my mind, this is still the new technique that needs to be talked about. Everyone knows the path towards making a living with a publisher or making a path to a living with a syndicate or making a path to a living with an on-staff cartooning job. So it's not up to us to pitch or to explain or to you know, outline how that life works because that's the well-known life. Ours is the unique and different path. I'm not saying the better path by any means. I'm just saying it's the different path that needs explaining, don't you think? I mean, that to me is the value of what we're adding to the conversation.
No, that is true. And I think it's the least obvious paths, too.
And one last addendum to that, I will acknowledge that there are other ways of doing things that we're talking about. And if the people who are, you know, offering criticism, if they feel strongly about those other ways that are unmentioned, sounds like maybe you got your book to write.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, we've written ours. If we're missing something, if we're so far off base, write your book.
And you know what? Actually, I think all four of us would actually look forward. I mean, as silly as it sounds, I look forward to any time that I look forward any time there's a new book on cartooning, even if it's terrible, because I always know there's always one little tidbit in there that I hadn't thought of, or you know, if Scott McCloud were to write a fourth book, I would be the first one to champion it. So if Glassbergen throws out a new book, I love that. Or you know, I drank those books up when I was a kid. So it's not. If anything, there should be more voices in the conversation. That we would look
still
forward
to. Absolutely. I get excited when people post the studio tours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the simple truth of it is, and I think Scott or Brad talked about it in the book, is that, you know, the very fact that most of us don't come to a career in cartooning through an organized school or an organized educational system means that you need to take in and soak in a whole bunch of stuff, run it through your filter, and find what works for you. And so if you take just a tenth of what we describe in the book and then for the most part apply it to what would traditionally be a normal cartooning career, great. Because you've taken whatever tools we could give you, and you've added it to whatever cool tools McCloud could give you, and Glassbergen could give you, and Lee Nordling could give you, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's how we built our career, by taking little tips and tricks and tools from other cartoonists that they were kind enough to pass along. So, I don't know. I think that's the valid way to go about building a cartooning career.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
I think we all feel that.
But I'm sort of curious, Scott, though, because I just did a blog search on Technorati, and I couldn't find any critiques of the book most recently as 72 days ago or 62 days ago.
What on the search, how to make webcomics?
Yeah. Am I searching the wrong things? Here, let's see.
No, and I'm sorry that I can't remember exactly where I read any of this stuff. And I have to admit that a part of it is I read something where people are being vague, and I'm assuming they're speaking of us because I'm not really sure who else is really talking out about this stuff right now. So we're pretty active right now in discussing making your career in webcomics, you know.
Yeah. And I got to tell you from a different perspective, too. Yesterday I gave a talk to the Society of Illustrators in L.A.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
And on my way over, I called Scott and I called Chris because I had a long drive over to Glendale and sort of chatted about it. And it was very interesting because in my mind, as I'm driving over, I'm thinking all the knowledge and techniques and tricks that I have as a web cartoonist in terms of making a living, I'm not even sure how much this is applicable to an illustrator's life, because you can't just put stuff, your illustrations up online for free, and or at least that was my thought, and make a living from it. But what was really gratifying about the talk, and it went 3 hours, by the way, with Q&A, was that these illustrators were fascinated not necessarily because it was personally applicable to them, but because it was this whole new way of making money as a as an illustrator, as a cartoonist, as a as a as an artist that they hadn't been familiar with. And I think there's something cool about that. It's just that it's for no other reason than to be up to date on what was going on in the art world. It was fun for them to sort of to talk about how artists were making it work for them on the web, you know.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I kid you not. So I talked for about 40 minutes, and then it was about 2 hours and 10 minutes of questions in which nobody left, and they were all sort of very much entranced on how this all worked. And I think there's something unique about it because it's essentially, you know, we've had some people say, oh, well, the life you're describing is no different than a freelancer. And I think, well, wait a minute. No, this is very different than a freelancer. A freelancer works for a client and is sort of editorialized by their whims and desires and subjective tastes, whereas we work, our client base is essentially our audience. So for me, it's not at all described by the traditional freelance model. And then someone else said recently that what we're describing is the same as like what Jeff Smith or the black and white guys in the 80s did with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Bone or that sort of thing, where it was more independent.
I feel like that's more accurate of a description.
And that is more accurate. But you know what's interesting is that even that is different because we're not reliant on or having to go through the intercessor of comic book shops all around America, you know, which is kind of mm-hmm. what those guys had to do. They had to either go through their early 80s versions of Diamond, whatever it was that existed back then, and then they also had to travel around or call around to comic book shops and get it into shops to even get it to people that could then like or dislike it. Whereas we have a very different system, I think, where we're building up an audience before we even have something to sell, you know. So I think it's good, like you said, Scott, it's much closer to the Jeff Smith or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle model. But it's interesting to me in the sense that the web makes it very different than what they had to do with comic book shops.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's why I think the Illustrator Talk went so well, because for a lot of these, not I don't want to say older illustrators, but even the younger and middle-aged illustrators, they were like, really? This is how you – and you make a living at this. And you're saying, you know, for a while there, that was the sort of question. Like, no, you're not kidding me. This is literally how you do it? And, you know. They were amazed at the thought of not having to work for a client. That was the thing that was sort of fascinating to them, was that there wasn't an editor, there wasn't a publisher, there wasn't a client that could editorialize you. And that's still sort of unique for what we do. But anyway, all right, that was me talking too long.
That's awesome. No, I think that's fantastic. And then you're like, no, listen, you guys paid me to come talk here. Like, see, I just did it again. More money, I made it. Now can I get my check and go?
See, that's how I get you. No, but I did start off the talk to them by saying, I'm sort of curious to hear to see how you guys will react to this, because I'm not quite sure if what I have to say will be applicable to your careers or what you do. And interestingly, by the end of the conversation, we started to pick out this or that point that could work for them and how they work online and all that sort of stuff. So there, you know, there's stuff to be learned. I certainly have stuff to learn from illustrators and how they work, that's for sure. So... yeah, this is not us describing the one be-all, end-all model that supersedes and is far better than any other model.
But in a way it is, though, right? I mean...
well, listen, it's... Let's we've never here. No, we've never said that. But listen, I mean, it's one of those... Oops. It's one of those things where if you're asking, is this the best way to make a living in comics, it's not... necessarily it's the best for me, but that's not necessarily the best for everybody. But right. when someone comes to you and says, I have my own creation, I have this comic strip, I want to do the most I can with it, or I have a comic book idea and I have the most I want to do with it, you know, what path should I take? Should I seek a publisher? I mean, you know, Dave and I have sat down and discussed, you know, even like a good publisher, like an Image or a Dark Horse deal, where you figure out the math and they could make more money just printing the book on their own. You know, I mean, it all comes down to, you know, the more work you do, the more you can keep, but then you have to do the work. Right. But when it comes to maintaining ownership, I just don't think there's a wrong answer in that. There's only one way to do that the right way, and that is not
give it up. Well, here's the question. Do any of the people who write in or who are writing about this say that there's another way to do that? Because I don't know what that way would be.
As far as retaining ownership?
Yeah, I mean, you either own your copyright and your rights to the
Well, no, I mean, I think that's the difference is that I think some people would argue that just because you sign with a syndicate and they own half your copyright, that doesn't mean that you've done something wrong or that you've
the average syndicate doesn't own the copyright, though, just to be clear.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, they don't own it technically. They just own it in the spirit of it, right? Like, they don't own the copyright. They let the artist retain the copyright, but they have a contract that says that they get half everything. They have half the termination and what's done with it. They have first right of refusal on new things, so who cares if you have the copyright?
Right, right. Well, and that's why I always tell people, you know, when they're I've had a couple conversations with Chris here in LA and other ones around the country where I think and maybe even more so than you, Scott, or Chris or Brad, I come off probably a little more vehement of the path we've described than you three. But my bottom line is it sounds stupid, but I love my boss. I love working for me. I love the fact that I don't have to answer to anybody. I love the fact that knowing it, that if it's up to me whether or not I will succeed or fail, it sounds like hubris, but I know I will succeed if it's up to me. If it's up to an editor or a publisher or a sales guy, I'm not sure I'm going to succeed. I'll put in my best effort, but I don't know if it's going to work out. But I know from my own sheer will to make my cartooning career work that if it's up to me to make it work, I will make it work. I will work the hours. I will do what it takes to make it work. And for a lot of people, depending on their personality, that's not what they want. They're like, whether it's insecurity or knowing what your abilities are, I can see that is not the path for everyone. So, you know, I'm careful not to say to people, this is the only way you can do it, because I know from people's own personality, it's not the only way to do it, you know?
Nah.
Man, I'm making you guys all quiet. Never mind.
Listen, it's just, it's one of those things. It's just, I saw it a couple of times on the Daily Cartoonist where it's like, oh, these guys that say do it yourself, I think it's the only way to do it. They're just like, that's all they preach is it's the only way, it's the only way, it's the only way. I just didn't feel that we had done that. And when, in addition to that, you know, when it comes down to maintaining the ownership of your work, it is the only way. I mean, I read an article recently in the Comics Journal about a friend of mine that works for Marvel and does his own creator-owned stuff. And one of the questions was, how do you feel about creating characters, new characters, that you know that Marvel will own and that you'll never own? And do you ever find yourself holding back? And his response was, well, sure, I've thought about it, but, you know, I remember when I was creating this one villain for Marvel Team-Up, and I thought maybe that would be a cool villain to keep in my book, but you can't think that way. You know, when you sign up for the work for hire and you do stuff for Marvel, and you know that what you create becomes theirs, and you get excited about contributing to that universe and contributing to what, you know, inspired you to do comics when you were growing up. You know, if you hold back and save all the stuff for yours, you know, then you don't contribute to the mythos. And that's the excitement of working for Marvel or DC, is that you're contributing now to the ongoing adventures, the mythos of those characters. So, he gets paid a fair wage, and he's, you know, contributing to that. Certainly Marvel and DC have brought a lion's share of the IP to the table when you do a work for hire, but if you have something that you've created out of whole cloth, I just can't see, as someone in a position to offer advice, offering any other advice other than at no costs, at any cost, maintain the rights to your work, no matter what. Like, let me ask you guys how you feel about this, but if I had to choose between someone discovering later that they maybe missed one or two opportunities that maybe would have gotten them ahead of the game, as opposed to taking a shot at an opportunity and losing all their rights, I would err on the side of missing some potential opportunities for gain. Mm-hmm. Because I think cartooning is a market where the potential gain of any one opportunity is pretty limited, right? Otherwise, we'd all be doing a lot better than we are.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate truth about signing away for a book or signing away for, and that's why Scott, whenever you and I crunch the numbers on say a publishing deal from a certain publisher or for Image or Dark Horse or Random
Oni
House
or something,
yeah, is that my thought, and one of the reasons why I always say I'm really hesitant to ever sign away Sheldon until I'm like at year 20 or 25 when I can dictate terms a little bit better, is that for me, yeah, great, it's a payday of, say, $80,000 for Sheldon for a certain book deal, or $40,000 or whatever you want to call it. But that's a one-time payout. And my thing is, my continuing thought whenever I make a decision on Sheldon is, regardless of the money today, how will I continue to be paid as the years go on? And one of the things, one of the joys of having ownership as much as you can is that I know that my business is growing month over month, year over year, and that whatever I'm making now will continue to grow. And the thing I worry about is not the growth right now, it's the potential slowdown 30 years from now. But I counteract that by knowing that from my own work in corporate life is that if I put my hope in a corporation, I'm very layoffable at 50. Or, you know, Marvel's not going to be hiring me for work for hire when I'm 45 or 50 as easily as they did when I was 25 and cheap. And it's a tricky road to hoe when you've got to decide whether to own it all yourself and develop it yourself or go the corporate route. But for me, it's been a very clear decision to own it.
And I think I have across the board always immediately regretted any deal where there's an upfront advance and then you continue to do work months and months after the advance, years after the advance, and then you just watch royalty checks come in that will never amount to anything beyond your advance. And it's like, I did this. This is work I did 2 years ago that I got paid for 2 years ago that I'm still working on.
Right.
You know, it always just feels like this is ridiculous. Oh, why did I do this? You know, I feel that way about the stupid mobile deal I signed with Go Comics sometimes. And I don't even have to do any work for that. I just send them old stuff. But it's just one of those things where...
Oh, did you sign up for that one?
Yeah, I mean it was a great opportunity. I really enjoyed. I mean, Sheena Wolf over at UClick is really awesome. The people have been super nice. It's not really a syndicate. It's just putting PvP wallpapers on a phone and comics on the phone. You read them one panel at a time. It's really weird because if I have one complaint about it, I just don't feel that they offer it on enough phones. But it's just one of those things where it was a nice payday up front and it was no extra work, but you can't help but get the numbers because, you know, you get statements, right? You'll get a statement that says, oh, this month there were 12 downloads and you got paid the quarter of a cent and we took a half of that quarter and so you got a quarter of a half of a quarter of a cent to apply to that upfront advance you were given and it will be people won't even use phones by the time you would ever make a profit.
You're making money again, yeah.
We'll be using telepathy, thank you.
Right. And then it's like, yeah, you can't, and whether it's a good deal or a bad deal, for in this case it's a good, I think I thought it was a good deal, but you can't help but just go, wow, why did I do this? This was dumb. Mm. You know, that was a fun check to get, but, you know, now it's like, buh. Now it's just a pain in the butt.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, so we've talked that topic good.
Well, I think we're just about out of our mailbag questions. Let's just wrap it up with one quick reminder on San Diego. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good. So two talks by all four of us. The first one with Phil Folio on Friday. I think room 8 or room 3. One of you can correct me on that.
Let me jump in. Let me look at my website. I've got the listing there.
And that one is more of a readership talk. It's going to be an intro to webcomics in general. And Phil will be moderating the four of us. And then later on in the day from 6 to 7, we've got sort of a How to Make Webcomics Live, which is a version of the podcast, version of the book, more for an artist perspective. Also on Friday, that one is also in room 8 or 3. And I'm not sure, Chris, maybe hopefully he has it up by now.
Yeah, so the first one, 3 p.m., is in room 3. That's easy to remember, and at 6 p.m. we're in room 8.
Nice.
So that should be a fun day.
And that's on Friday.
That's on Friday.
And then you can catch the three different booth locations. Chris, Brad, and I will be at booth number 2107, and Scott will be at booth, what is it, Scott? I already forgot, I'm sorry.
I think it is 1437.
1437.
1437, and then all four of us will be taking turns at the image booth signing How to Make Webcomics.
I'm going
to
be wearing my Double Dragon shirt on Friday.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be wearing my aviators like the whole weekend.
I bought a new shirt. It's a black button-up shirt. It's got white flames on the bottom and trim in the sleeves, and it's got double dragons on the front. Pow.
Nice.
I've never bought a goofy shirt like that. You know, like people wear at cons. I don't know that I would wear it anywhere but the con, but I'm like double dragging it.
There are shirts for that are like that, yeah.
What would the reaction be in Texas to a shirt like that?
Oh,
look
murder.
At the fat guy in the weird shirt. They'd be like, "Hey, Mooner, where's the keg?" You know, I'd be the college guy. I guess that's a Hawaiian shirt. Look at that. I don't know. I mean, I see people wearing those shirts all the time. I would just never wear one except for to a Comic-Con.
Yeah, so yeah. Or to a kegger. Exactly.
And as a special treat, this is the what is it, Chris, the second or the third time a year that Chris showers. So the con will be a...
So look forward to that.
So look forward to that.
This year, Irish Spring. Irish Spring.
Is that because of your strange religion involving...
Exactly,
what's your
yes.
religion? What are you again?
I am a... oh, man, I don't even have a joke lined up for that. just fill in the blank.
Just fill in the blank.
insert a name later in post-production.
And this will be the last chance that people will have to get the four of us to sign a book on the West Coast. Is that right?
Basically.
That is true. Yeah, all the four of us will all be at Baltimore, right? Is that right? Do I have that right? Is that
yeah.
where we are?
Baltimore Comic Con.
Yep.
Yes.
But on the West Coast, this will be your last chance.
But on the West Coast, and this is and Brad's bringing a limited number of high fives, so make sure you ask for those from Brad.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, there was a problem at the manufacturer.
So they're only high threes.
Brad, that was a hard one for me not to laugh at. I've been trying like the last two podcasts, whenever you throw out a joke, just to hold it in and not laugh, so you could be like, "Come on, Sky Mall." But
don't think I haven't noticed that because
yeah.
I've some choice little bits. I had Sky Mall. I had Boy George in Vermont. I've mm-hmm. had some good stuff, and you guys have been like in collusion.
Those last two, not so much. But then this one this week with the one you just did. I don't know. I forgot it already. But it was pretty funny.
You know what, Brad? I always blame it on my mic. I always think, you know what? They just didn't hear me. That's why. It's not because I suck.
Oh, high fives at the manufacturing level. That's what it was. That's top notch stuff.
You know what I love, though, Brad? I love the idea that
now
you
I
are...
think you're being sarcastic, Scott, and it isn't going to go. Right? It isn't going to go. You're
you know what?
Sarcastic.
I don't accept your. You know what? I don't accept your compliment because you are mocking me.
Now I think you're mocking me. Yeah.
No, I'm not mocking you. The high five manufacturer. That was pretty good, dude.
It was whimsical.
It was hard for me not to laugh at that.
It was whimsical.
Now you really are.
No. Listen, Brad. I'm admitting. Listen to me. I am being sincere. When I say that it's even tonight, I've been trying, especially when you've got a nice, clean joke, when you're the only one talking, and you lay a joke out there, I've been trying not to laugh on purpose so you can, just so I can initiate you going, come on! But it was, I'm telling you that the manufacturer high five joke made me break that. I giggled at that.
Scott, that's just mean.
Hmm?
That is just mean. Wow.
Whatever. Try living 15 years as a fat man. You come back to me talking about me. My mother is dead.
Oh, no,
I wasn't
going to
bring
again.
It up, but you're right. Yes.
We lost Dave.
Oh, no, we did lose Dave again. I thought he had completely dropped out on my mother is dead joke.
That might have happened.
That's really not a joke, guys, though. She did die.
She really is dead, though.
Thank you, Chris. See, thank you for joining me on that. Like, my mom would get a kick out of that.
I don't know that my mom would get a kick out of that, so I'm going to just dodge that. I mean, she's
your mom
I mean,
would
she's
not
get a dead.
No,
she's
but
not
she's
dead,
not going
but...
to get a kick out of you making fun of my mom.
Look, if it's fine with you, I'll jump in there.
My mom would expect a respectful silence after a my mom is dead comment, one way or the other.
Huzzah.
Even if she wasn't dead.
Even if she was perfectly breathing.
Yeah. It's just sensitivity.
Dave, are you having trouble with what's going on?
I've gotten knocked off twice tonight.
Are you recording again?
I am recording again. Yes.
I bet. Okay. I bet it's my mom.
Oh, <geez. laughs> cut of me just weeping. I'm just.
It's my mom. No, it's my mom's spirit. She's being playful.
Oh, Scott, what was the anime convention that we went to where you brought that up, and you were killing people with it?
Oh, we were at the panel. What was the purpose behind that?
I have no idea.
We were discussing comedy versus drama, and I said, like, it's easy for me to come into a room and go, guys, I'm so sorry that I was late to this. I just got a call. My mom has died. Because everyone in the room would be like, oh, and I'd be like, ah, see, I gotcha. Drama, easy. But I can't guarantee that everyone is going to laugh. That is hard. That's hard to do. And then everyone was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then I went, but my mom is dead, though. She died. And then nobody knew what to do. And then Chris goes, she did. She died. It was 96, but... And then I'm like, I'm cool. Like, I'm not sad now. I mean, I guess I'm sad. And then no one knew what to do. And Chris and I kept it going, right? Isn't that what happened?
I think basically that was it. Yeah.
And then everyone went, and then Chris goes, I mean, were you sad when it happened? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm not inhuman. I'm sad now if I think about it. Let's not talk about it. And then there was a pause, and I go, but seriously, though, she's dead. Yeah, and that was the panel where those really two awkward people in the front row, we ended the panel. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yeah, I remember. They were like groping each other or something, and we were like, no,
and I'm like, whoa, no,
done.
No, whoa, 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 whoa,
we are
and
finished.
Like we stopped the panel down, and I said, how old are you two? Are you like 14? And she's like, well, I'm 14, but he's 14, and that's so it's cool. And I'm like, no, it's not. Panel over. We're done. And nobody knew what to do, and Chris and I were like, yeah, we're out of here. And then we left. We didn't even come back to the next day.
Yeah, like rock stars, guys.
Of a couple of groping teenagers?
Yeah, we're weird that way, Brad.
Yeah, we don't like that. I don't know how things fly up in Philly, but we don't like that.
I don't know how badly they were groping. I mean,
it was one of, so it was, here's the thing. We got invited. Chris and I got invited to this anime con here locally. And we're like, well, that ought to be okay. That's cool. Like, we hear people do pretty well at anime cons. Like, the Deans were there. Greg Dean and his wife were there, and they do great at those cons. And so Chris and I are like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. And, like, day one, we walk in, and it's like, uh-oh, no. What have we done? Because there were people walking around with dolls. And I don't mean, like, you think I mean. I mean dolls that were, like, perfect replicas of humans at a 1/8 inch scale. Like, it was almost like they were carrying around
children. Like, babies.
Yes.
It was very peculiar.
They had strollers for them. They had little slings like you carry a baby in for them. But they were incredibly, like, the thing that really was creepy about them was that there was no way that those were inexpensive. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars. And then later we found out, yes, they dress them up. They're thousands of dollars. They treat them like real people. There's this whole thing around it. And wow. Chris and I were like, we have got to get out of here.
So Capstone thought anime cons worth doing then, huh?
No. Apparently for some people,
but not
for us.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say anime cons, never good to do. Never.
Not even for people who do well there.
No, that is the like, you know, like people criticize maybe us for saying that there's one path to success. Path to never being creeped out at an anime con is always not going. Always turn that down. Not for you. Not for you.
But Scott, they're paying my way. No. Don't do it. Back away.
No, David. Trust me when I say not for you.
Set up a booth in your local mall. That will be better. Don't go to this anime con. They're going to buy me a nice hotel room. No, don't do it.
Nope, that is the worst. Okay.
that especially.
That's an invitation for danger. Right
that
there.
Was the con. That was the con where we were late getting to breakfast, and we got the buffet anyway. And I said, oh, it looks like you're taking breakfast down. And she's like, oh, it's okay. You can still get breakfast, but we couldn't see any breakfast anywhere. And Chris goes, they just take everything left over in the buffet and put it in a big wooden barrel, and the barrel says breakfast scramblings on them. And you've got a milk jug, a gallon milk jug cut in
cereal
half, and you can just scoop up.
And...
Yeah, you can just scoop up breakfast scramblings on your plate.
Yeah.
Oh man,
it's a good con,
and
good
that's
con.
A lot like webcomics.
It's a lot like Webcomics Weekly.
Hey, I did get an email just make everybody feel better about this rambling at the end, where I got an email today from someone who said, just so you know, I'm really into webcomics. I have my own. It's very important to me, and that's why I listen to your podcast. But my wife has no dog in this hunt. But she used to live in New York, and your last episode about the cabbies, it just had her rolling. So there you go.
Nice.
We reach a wide audience.
Can I tell you my favorite moment from that, listening to it later on in the week, was the cabbie describing Ava Link. Oh, I tell you what, there's a lot of cleavage in this shot. Dead lightning lady.
All right, guys.
All right, Webcomic Weekly, we out.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about what happened at San Diego.
That's right.
Yeah. And then we won't talk about San Diego for another whole year. Maybe.
Basically.
Maybe. All right, stop recording now.